incredible Wednesday night in downtown Chicago. And we are broadcasting live from the Allstate Showcase Studios. Don't forget, if you miss any of the show, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. And please tell all of your friends. Follow the show on Facebook. It's Patty V Show. You can also follow Andrea Darlis on Facebook as well. And again, you're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. I know that it's August 1st, and some of the kids are going to be starting school. I just talked to a friend of mine that school for their child is starting on August 9th. And I'm going to pretend like that's not happening for them because my kids go to CPS and they get to wait until after Labor Day. So we just went in today for Griffin's physical, so we got that done. And it's so weird when you start thinking of all the stuff that you have to get, all the boxes that have to be checked for back to school, right? Stuff. And
I've decided
now that maybe schools should in the summer shouldn't be back in until the baseball season. I think that they should go back to school during the postseason of baseball.
I think that's
during
a
the
great
playoffs
idea.
Yeah, that's what I want to start doing.
I always feel bad because it's 80 degrees. I mean, we never had air conditioning in our school. And now some of the schools I know don't, especially on the south side, and you have to go back and it's hot and who wants to be in school in August?
I know. You know? I know, and a lot of people are trying to get like last minute trips in, and I hope that everyone is able to enjoy the summer because it really has gone so fast. Traffic has been so erratic, I think. There are days when it's like 3 in the afternoon. I think the nicer the day, Andrea, the thicker traffic is.
Oh my God. Don't even start me on today.
When
it starts to rain, it's like, oh no, here we go.
Well, and I usually do a pretty good job of making sure I'm on top of Skilling's forecast. It was sort of scattered. You could tell that there were parts of the area that were getting just shellacked because there were these just ominously dark clouds in certain parts of the area, and I felt like we just barely dodged all of it. And I want to thank the folks out at the Hobos in Villa Park. We went we're looking for some stuff for our bathroom. We got some flooring done. And it started to drizzle a little bit, and the woman saw the whole family trying to, you know, we were trying to get everything out there, and she had us up on the sidewalk almost up to the doors. And I thought, well, this is really nice service. Those folks are really cool. It is the best place if you are looking to redo your bathroom, your kitchen. They've got a lot of great odds and ends there. They have stuff that's not odds and ends. It's actually, they've got a good stock of all different styles from high end to low end. Although not, we went to one of the big box stores that everyone's familiar with, and we all fell in love with one bathroom vanity, and it was $100.
Oh my God!
I can't. Yeah,
high end taste. Right?
Yeah, I was like, no. Hey everybody, that's not happening to our bathroom. But it's been 15 years. I don't know if anyone else has gone through this, where you compromise on certain elements of decor in a room,
right?
And you have something in mind. The other person has something in mind. You're like, all right, we'll find some middle ground. 15 years ago, I really wanted a cobalt blue floor, like Greece, like a Mediterranean blue.
Sure.
And white.
Yeah, I had a townhome that had a cobalt blue and bathroom floor.
Right. So yeah. I wanted to do something with cobalt blue, and I was going to do like light blue walls, and I compromised. I had the light blue walls, I had everything white and blue except for the floor, because my husband said, look, these are kind of they have sort of a color that will blend with everything, and it was like a putty color. And he said it'll have that sort of neutral color. Andrea, I have looked at this floor for the last 15 years every single day.
Oh,
every time
God.
I go to the bathroom, I look down, I'm like, I hate this floor. I hate this floor. I hate this floor.
Right.
I hate this
and
floor.
And it's not like a room that you don't use. It's you use it all, you know,
every
several times a day.
Single day.
Right.
Yes. Often. And so I held the line. Now, here's the thing, though. If I'm wrong about this floor, I don't know that I'll ever hear the end of it, because I've been pretty loud about this. I actually wanted to paint the bathroom floor, which I thought would have been, then I could have, you can paint a bathroom floor. Hannah Stanley told me I'm not crazy. And if Hannah Stanley says I am not crazy, I assure you, I am not crazy.
Okay.
I'm just
right.
saying. She said I could do it. There are ways to, we actually painted my mother's backsplash years ago. So it was tile.
Uh-huh.
There's a certain type of primer that adheres to the, even if it's shiny tile, no matter what kind it is. And then you have to, there's several treatments, and the type of paint that you use is very specific in order to withstand the water. And then we actually did mosaic. We did a stenciling, so that my mom was on vacation, so when she came back, she had this incredible, I'm still proud of it. It's very pretty 14 or 15 years later, because we did the whole house upstairs and downstairs it is starting to show a little bit of wear and tear. But I figured if I painted my bathroom floor, even if I got a year out of it, it would have only cost me $100 to redo the floor. But my husband was in the kids have to walk on it and stuff. I'm like, go pee outside, you're boys.
Right. There you go. Enough said, right?
Exactly. I don't know. Does anybody have that? Do you have anything in your house that you wish you had done differently, but you compromised? 312-981-7200. If there's something that you had a certain idea that you knew you wanted done one way, like let's say that birdhouse you're working out, Andrea, if you did it a different way, somebody has one idea and you just were like, you know what? I'm just going to do it with rainbows or with butterflies. Would they be mad if they didn't have the design they wanted? Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah, I'm mad about my bathroom floor. 312-981-7200. Do you have something that you hold over your loved one's head? We are actually going to talk about some wellness tonight. It is Wednesday and we have two great guests. We have Marilyn Peterson is coming in studio. She's got an event at the Wilmette Theater that we're going to find out more about in just a moment. I'm sorry, Marilyn Preston, who's coming in just a moment. And give us a call or text at any time during the show if you have a question or comment. 312-981-7200. Do we have a break here? Or I'm not sure how we're loading this up. Okay, more after this on 720 WGN. Thank you so much for hanging out for the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and the White Sox played late today. Man, when you have a rough game like that, it's got to be even worse when it's going that slowly, because that was a long haul for a big loss.
I think, how many times have we said, is there like a slaughter rule this season?
Yeah, but I don't think five runs, there's always hope. I think when you're within 10 runs, there's always hope.
Within 10?
I think so.
Do you really?
Well, there have been comebacks. There have been comebacks that were that big.
I guess, yeah. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call it super close, though.
No, not even a little bit.
I mean, if you're up by 10, I'd fold.
We probably should ask, but I'm sure there have been comebacks by 10.
Oh, I'm sure there have. Yeah. I don't think it's frequent, but yeah. Absolutely.
Well, that's the thing is, if you give up, here's the thing. I think mentally, if you start giving up on the games when you are down by 10, when do you turn that around? Especially when there are so many. It seems to be several games in a row where, you know, there have been, like in the last few weeks, it seems as though there have been more than three or four. Mm-hmm. There's been quite a few where they're from behind. So if you emotionally put yourself in the mindset of we're never going to catch up, then that will be the sort of modus operandi for the rest of the season.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to keep it positive. I'll bet Marilyn Preston agrees that you should stay positive when you're coming from behind, don't you think?
Yes, even when you're coming from ahead, you should stay positive. Yeah.
Do people get negative when they're ahead?
Well, no. If they lose their head, they get negative. It's a terrible thing to do, that kind of self-talk, negative self-talk, very bad.
It is. It can be destructive in so many ways.
That can be. It is totally destructive. No.
Well, we're very excited to have you in studio. I know you have an event coming up tomorrow night at the Wilmette Theater.
This is true, yes.
Where are you from originally?
Chicago, South Sider.
Oh, so do you live here now or are you traveling?
I'm here always in spirit.
Oh, really?
But the body has moved to Northern California. But I am a Chicagoan. I come back for charitable work with Girls in the Game, which is a great organization in Chicago. Works with girls in area of sports, fitness, and leadership. I'm still a member of the Chicago Network. Great group of women in Chicago. And I do live in Northern California now.
Where on the South Side are you from?
First Hyde Park, born at 55th and Ingleside, then South Shore.
Oh,
went to South Shore High School.
Very cool.
Now they call it Michelle Obama's neighborhood.
Yeah.
But it was Southsider. Are you Southsider?
I am a Southsider. Yeah, that's why I asked. 91st and Pulaski.
Oh, yeah.
So Beverly, Mount Greenwood,
Oakland. We used to go to Beverly to see the Christmas decorations.
Oh, I know. It's beautiful. And the Beverly Arts Center is beautiful. I don't know if you ever perform there, it is just
many
wonderful.
Times.
Yeah.
So it's, now Southsiders have something special, don't you? I saw your eyes light up when I said
did. I Southside. I always have to, we always have to represent. So I love that.
And now you live on the north side at Northern California?
Northern
California. Right. Way far north.
Way far north. Just moved there a couple years ago.
Is it the snow?
Event is at the Wilmette Theater.
Yes, which is also very far north.
Yeah, which is an iconic kind of a theater.
It is.
Great films there. But I had I had a long career in Chicago. I worked for the Chicago Tribune for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I started a syndicated column.
Well, we apologize for not being in that building anymore. We did the best we could to hold on. They were literally ripping us out of the building while we were clawing the walls with our nails. We tried to stay. We love that building. The Tribune Tower? Nobody's there anymore.
You know, it's all Prudential building, huh? Are they moved?
Yes, they've moved to Prudential.
So did they sell the whole building?
The whole building is gone. Really? It's now all going to be residential and retail.
Wow.
To be condos.
I, I did a lot of business with the Chicago Tribune and had a production company with them. But as soon as I heard that they renamed the company Trunk, did we know they were in big trouble right then?
It seemed to be like the writing was on the wall a little bit.
I love Chicago and love journalism in Chicago. It's just one of the great journalism cities. And it's hard to see what's going on. Although I have great hopes for the Sun-Times now.
Oh, wow.
I know nothing about
they
it.
They are
really
reinventing a lot.
That's what they're doing. They're reinventing.
With Jen and G from Windy City Live. I mean, they're doing a lot with their social media.
They have to because newspapers are so important.
Right.
And,
If you have a chance, check out Block Club Chicago, too. A lot of journalists doing neighborhood news. They took over for DNA Info. They were able to get their archives from them and now do their own publication as well online.
Yeah, well, Chicago is is a legendary journalism city.
Yeah,
so
it absolutely is.
So what led to the move from what you were doing as a columnist and doing TV production to the kind of work that you're doing now? And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the kind of work I'm doing now is the main work I do is I write a syndicated column, which has become America's longest running wellness column.
Congratulations.
So it's 42 years I'm writing this column, and it started right here in Chicago. So I was working for the paper. I was a critic then, a TV critic, media critic, had an office. It was very lovely. And I was getting close to turning 30. Oh, and my husband and I decided we were going to go ride our 10-speed bicycles. This is in the early 70s. Okay, so I'm at the paper. It's the early 70s. And we said, let's take our 10-speed bicycles to France and ride. And no one was doing that at the time. Now it's easy to go with groups. But in the early 70s, a very goofy idea, but an exciting adventure. So I thought, I was living in Hyde Park at the time. I said, I'm just going to take myself to the local park just to see, am I in shape for this trip? A bicycle trip in France? We were going through the wine country.
Sure.
So, what does it feel like to run a few blocks? So I'll tell you what it felt like. It was a near-death experience.
Really?
Wow.
Really. I was pathetically out of shape. I was just sucking.
And you look like you're very in shape. I mean,
time has passed since the early 70s. But I was startled. But we went to France. We had a great time. And when I got back, you know how journalists are. They think whatever they're interested in, other people are interested in too. So I got very interested in, why am I so out of shape? And what do I need to do to get back into shape? And my first job out of graduate school at Medill, by the way, at Northwestern, was a medical writer. I was always interested in health and biology and medicine. So I'm at the paper, and I began to research fitness, holistic health, integrative medicine, mind-body medicine, because the doctor columns in newspapers then were very traditional kind of headaches and hemorrhoids, very drug-oriented, I would say. And I wanted to write a new kind of medical column for the paper that would be more for people like us, let's say, who I'm a runner with knee pain. What do I do? Or my kid won't get off the couch, and how can I get him interested in sports?
So more about what they're, kind of meet them where they are, rather than sort of here's the blanket statement or the blanket treatment.
Completely. And so I came to them with this idea for a column, and they said, write up some samples. And I did. I got a local sports medicine doctor in Chicago who was the team doctor for the Bulls and the Bears, a guy named David Bachman. And I told him about the idea, and I said, it's my column, but I'd like you to, front it, make sure I don't get in any trouble with it. Uh-huh. And so we wrote some sample columns, and then it got started. And so here it is 42 years later. I'm still writing it. Now I'm just writing it because actually over 42 years, I became an expert myself in healthy lifestyle. And I've been a fitness trainer for 20 years and a wellness coach. But I'm really not talking about fitness as well as I am about personal well-being. Much broader topic.
But you still eat fries, too.
Do I ever?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How do you stay up to date, especially with how much technology changes, how much we understand about the body and the mind and that connection? I know a lot of what you do is also connecting spirituality. You say that you're an expert. How much do you have to make sure that you're on top of, not just the personal experiences that people have, but the information that's out there?
Totally. Yes, I feel. I come at it as a journalist. So every couple of years, I'm accredited by ACE, America Council on Exercise, and I have to take so many hours of continuing education. Another accreditation is Well Coaches, which is connected to Harvard, because there are lots of life coaches, and this one is a pretty rigorous training.
Yeah.
I do it that way. I certainly get letters from readers and stay sharp, but I'm not sitting out there like prescribing drugs for people or telling them what kind of surgery to have. Personal well-being is so much, it's not about how much you weigh or how many times you go to the gym. It's like, what's your felt, like, how are you dealing with stress in your life?
Right.
Because, you know, talking about stress, have we ever had more stress in our lives than we're feeling today?
I don't know. I would think that when you're having woolly mammoths hunt you down, we might, or you're trying to, like, you know, use a spear to kill your animals, there was probably a lot of stress back then.
Yes.
It's different kinds of stress. Yeah.
Different kinds.
Well, that's the thing,
surrounded.
Yes. Now, but the thing is, the technology, kind of the stress and the way that, because we don't know yet how our brain responds to that and how that expresses itself physiologically.
We don't know yet, but the early signs are not good.
No, at all.
So we know that, well, I tell you, everyone will tell you that they are distracted. They feel rushed and pressured. They're working 24/7.
Right.
They're overconnected. And when you ask them to put down their devices, I mean, they really can't. They can't stop checking it. So we do know from science that people are checking their, and kids are worried. I mean, 75 times a day, they're checking emails.
And the ages are getting younger and younger and younger, too. It used to be 12, 13. Now kids have cell phones at like 8.
Yes. And to me, one of the saddest things I can see, I'll bet you'll agree, you go out to dinner, and you're looking at mom and dad and two little kids, let's say, and everyone's on a device.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurts. It's painful to see this kind of a thing. So we have some early indicators that it's not good.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know it's the most addictive. Our smartphones, our devices, were created to be addictive.
Right.
So now it was like kind of the law of unintended consequences. We see people who were early inventors of the internet, warning people, back off. And then it's up to individuals. You know, you can't just tell someone to put it down or disconnect or don't text when you're driving. Change comes because they want to do it.
And unfortunately, sometimes change comes because they've been affected negatively. That's usually when the most change happens. And it's sad that we have to wait that long. Well, we have something that's good, hopefully, for positive change. Well, it's definitely for positive change. We have a pair of tickets to give away for your event tomorrow night at the Wilmette Theater. So this is at the Wilmette Theater, Thursday, August 2nd, which is now just in less than 24
moments
hours
away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What time does your event start?
So it starts at 7. Mm-hmm. It's a live conversation with Jen Weigel, who I believe you know, who is so smart and so funny. I've just read two of her books. I love them. And she, too, as a journalist, has really opened people's eyes, I think, to things that were underreported having to do with people's everyday experiences of their spiritual life, of the mystery. And so I think creating an awareness for that is something I've tried to do as well with our medical system, for one example, because we're in big trouble with our healthcare system.
Well, interesting that you should say that. We're going to bring in another guest in just a moment, because on Wednesdays we try to take on issues of wellness, and
beautiful.
That's why I called it Wellness Wednesday years
Excellent.
Ago. I would love to bring in Kathy Tynus with you. I also want to give away these tickets.
Please.
I have a trivia question. Whoever can answer this, and I'll make it multiple choice for everybody. But which vegetable? Okay, vegetables are obviously widely considered to be the healthiest vegetables people can eat. Which of the following is how do you say cruciferous? Cruciferous?
I know what you mean. It's like broccoli. Cruciferous. I think you're right.
Cruciferous. See, nobody was able to answer. I like that everyone looked at me like, what?
Cruciferous.
Did I just miss something for getting cruciferous?
That was from our, we're getting the pronunciation from Google pronunciation. Go ahead, do it again, Michael.
Cruciferous.
Wow. I want to mark the moment where I got that right. Cruciferous. Which of the following is a cruciferous vegetable? Carrot, spinach, asparagus, or cauliflower? 312-981-7200. Tell me which one is a cruciferous vegetable? Carrot, spinach, asparagus, or cauliflower? 312-981-7200. Before we go to the news, Donna's been wanting to hold on to this one. A Lou Manfredini quote. We were talking about design compromises that you make with your loved ones. What does Lou say, Donna?
Lou says, if you want a happy life, you have a happy life.
Oh, happy wife. Happy wife.
So he's saying that if you're going to be a husband, make your wife happy and you will be happy too.
I think my husband thought I probably was overly nice when I was like, sure, I'm sure it'll work. And he didn't hear the sure.
Yeah.
I think by now he's probably learned that, happy life, happy wife. No, happy wife, happy life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not only that, but if you listen to Lou or ask him about how to redo your bathroom floor to turn it blue, he'll be able to tell you.
That's true.
I know. And at this point, we're not going to be able to paint the bathroom floor. We're just going to rip it out. And fortunately, at Hobo's, I was able to get pretty much every single tile for under $100. Of course, it's going to cost like $400 to rip out the old one and put it in a new one. But it's fine. Yeah. It's totally fine. Thank you, Donna. Have a great night. I appreciate that. It's a good thing to remind my husband. Happy wife, happy life.
It's Wellness Wednesday.
Is there a doctor in the house? Is there a doctor in the house?
I'm a doctor.
What's up, doc?
We're thrilled to welcome for the first time on our show Marilyn Preston, who is going to be at an event at the Wilmette Theater with Jen Weigel for a great conversation about how to take care of yourself both physically and spiritually.
The name of the conversation is All Is Well, or Is It? And it's based on a book I've written called All Is Well, The Art and Science of Personal Well-Being. Yeah, so it should be a lot of fun. I hope people come out for it.
What's the website where people can get tickets for that event?
WilmetteTheater.org. Wilmette Theater is just a fabulous place.
It really is.
Yeah, and so Jen has a series of conversations with authors on fun topics, and personal well-being is, we make it fun.
Excellent. And fortunately, we have a pair of tickets to give away to our caller who knows which cruciferous vegetable I asked about. Which one is it, Karen?
Cauliflower.
I like the way you say it. Cauliflower. Is that like a Chicago accent that you threw on top of that?
I guess it is.
Cauliflower.
That's how I say it. How do you say it?
Cauliflower.
Cauliflower?
Yeah, cauliflower.
Oh, I say cauliflower.
How do you guys say?
I say broccoli.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
How do you say it, Dr. Tynes?
Cauliflower.
Cauliflower. What did I just say now? Cauliflower.
You said cauliflower.
Not cauliflower.
You said cauliflower. You said call.
Cauliflower.
Like
cauliflower.
Call me.
C-A-U-L, cauliflower.
Right. I say
cauliflower.
Cauliflower would be C-A-L-I.
Yeah, but what about the comeback that Brussels sprouts have made?
I hate Brussels sprouts.
I know, but they're such
with a
passion.
Popular
item now.
Yeah, they are. They're like
are
a delicacy.
They're everywhere.
There's not enough bacon in the world for those things to taste good. They give me heartburn. They make my stomach upset.
Yes.
They make me angry at the world.
Lots of gas.
Yeah, wow. lots
angst
of gas.
Against the Brussels sprouts.
All right, Karen, you've got a pair of tickets to see see Marilyn Preston at the Wilmette Theater.
Yay! Yes, Karen, and
all is well.
Come say hello to us after the presentation.
Yes, go say hi to her. All is well, or is it? So that's the event at Wilmette Theater. Joining us in studio as well for the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis is Dr. Kathy Tynes. Because we were kind of pressed for time last week, there were a few topics we didn't get to that I wanted to discuss with you, and I thought it would be interesting to have you both in studio talking about wellness, because we often turn to our doctors for so many questions. And I know when I asked you last week about water safety, it was coming right off the heels of this incredibly tragic story out of Missouri where 17 people had lost their lives on the duck boats. And, I see people and I hate to say this, acting as though it's not a big deal to be on the water, whether it's on a boat or on the edge of the water, or a lot of times people take their kids to the pool or the beach and they go, just stay by the lifeguard. And they, maybe their, you know, their kid isn't a very strong swimmer. They assume the lifeguards will take care of them. But part of the lifeguard's duty is to make sure that everybody's safe, not your child specifically. So do you have any thoughts on water safety? And because I know that, I mean, a child can, anybody can drown in just a puddle of water, believe it or not.
Absolutely. And, you know, here's the thing. It's the third leading cause of unintentional accidental death. Mm-hmm. All right. And so we have to have a lot of respect for water, especially here in Lake Michigan, which is very volatile. It can change in an instant. You know, a smaller lake like in Missouri, that's less likely, but it's still always possible. So the important thing to know is that you should have some type of safety equipment, preferably a life vest. Water wings are not really adequate. You know, people put their kids in water wings. They're really not the best safety tool for kids. So weak and non-swimmers should always wear protective equipment, even if they're near the water, not just in the water. And certainly while on a boat, children should have their life vests on all the time. That's the law.
And people feel like, well, you know, it's a hassle. I don't want to put it on, or it looks silly. And the thing is, if you are not a strong swimmer, I know it doesn't look great, you know, but you can feel kind of cool like you're wearing a costume. I don't know what to tell you. I don't.
The duck boat accident, that case
that's what
in
I'm
point,
mm-hmm.
they should absolutely be. I mean, anytime you're on any sort of vessel, mm-hmm. you should have a life vest on.
People are not going to go out on the Odyssey for their dinner cruises with a life jacket.
Well, you're probably not with that, especially if it's a wedding.
It's a much bigger vessel, but I think, you know, as soon as they saw that there were some safety warnings, they probably should have had life vests available, mm-hmm. if not on them. The other thing to keep in mind is when you're out swimming, you should always have a partner.
Yes.
You shouldn't go out swimming alone. So, mm-hmm. you know, the buddy system saves lives. Mm-hmm. So make sure you're out there. Pay attention to the warning signs. They have flags out on the beach. And the other thing is that the hours for the lifeguards have actually been reduced the last few years because of cuts in the budget.
Yes.
So the lifeguards aren't out as late as they used to be. And those are vulnerable times, too.
Because I think people for decades were used to it. If you grew up in Chicago, you were used to the guards being there from 8 a.m. until sundown. We were there from 8 a.m. till 9 p.m. And actually, that's when we were on duty, but we were there till 10 p.m. still cleaning up. And we would have calls at Ohio Street, which isn't, it was just past Ohio Street. We dragged a body out of the water at the Ohio Reclamation Center. Mm. And people think, you know, because the guard, and again, I think it's this, you have this image of how safe the beaches had been for such a long time, but I actually called the medical records office today with the coroner's office, and so far I have found there have been about 20 deaths on our lakefronts since they pulled back the hours in 2009. Wow. So there was a drowning several weeks ago. The guards were off duty at 7 p.m., and this young lady drowned at about 7:30. So I've been doing some work with the city of Chicago to find out, because saving $700,000 a year is not worth the lives. It also takes educating the public. As you mentioned, pay attention as to whether or not there are guards on duty. The guards will put flags up. If there's a green flag, everything is safe. It doesn't mean go golfing. It means that it's safe. It means green means go. Yellow, and not just go, but pay attention. Stay near your lifeguards. Stay in front of their boats. You know, they are doing their best to make sure that they have a sight line for you. The yellow means it's a little bit choppy. Red means stay out of the water. The beaches are closed. And after 7 o'clock, there are no guards on duty. And it is, while it's swim at your own risk, it is a responsibility of the park districts to make sure people are informed and educated about our water.
Also, too, don't drink. I mean, so many of these drownings and these accidents, we cover these all the time, happen at 31st or 39th Street beaches, and it's after hours. And it's people drinking, and they're having a good time, and they think, oh, you know what? I can like, go jump in the water. Huh.
Well, and there are lots of instances where people take boats out and they really don't know what they're doing.
Right.
And, you know, people have jumped off a boat when it hasn't been secured with an anchor. Can you imagine? And they don't have a flotation device, and they don't have a line attaching them to the boat. And you know what? Those currents are swift. You can easily be taken away from that boat, and you'll never see it again.
And that's the thing. Now, Marilyn, having moved from Chicago to California, I know that it's different living closer to the ocean, but there is a significant amount of danger on Lake Michigan. It is not a body of water to be taken lightly.
Yeah, but you know, recently, I'm sure we all remember this fabulous story of the rescue of the Thai boys in Thailand, mm-hmm. who were trapped in the cave, Tam Luang Cave, for all those days, and we were following how they were rescued. And the reporting, it was very intensive. And they said at some point that it was 12 boys and their coach. The boys didn't know how to swim. Remember that? And there was like shock and outrage. Oh, these boys in Thailand don't know how to swim. Well, the numbers of kids who can't swim in the U.S. are astounding. And for minorities, they're really shocking. So we're not teaching our kids how to swim. I mean, first of all, we've taken PE out of the schools to such a tremendous extent. They used to teach swimming.
Oh, yeah, we had swimming.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We had swimming. But now, I mean, how this ever happened, how we ever got physical education out of our schools as much as we did, is a form of child abuse, I think. I think it's horrible.
I always feel bad when I meet someone who doesn't know how to swim. I try not to look shocked anymore, because I've met many people, and they tell me that they are making sure that their kids know how to swim.
Okay, good.
But at the same time, I've asked, when you are near the water, are you taking precautions? And not just whether or not there are life vests, right? Let's say you are going on the Odyssey. It's the same thing, I think, as when you get onto a plane. Know where your emergency exits are. If there were, and I know that no one wants to think this way, yeah, but what would you do if there was
an
emergency?
Where are their life vests? Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you go on a cruise, they have drills. Like, right. you know, they don't mess around. You have to show up on the deck with your life vest on.
Right.
I don't know if that's really practical in the Odyssey, but if, you know, it's a good idea to be aware of your surroundings and where everything's located.
Well, let the passengers know, in the event of an emergency, this is what will happen. I think that's, at the very least, something we could do for water safety on Lake Michigan for a lot of the commercial boating. Oh, boy. Everybody who owns a boat's like, oh, great. All the architecture tours and things like that. But it seems like the least you could do is to let people know what will happen in the event of an emergency. I don't think that's too much to ask for.
Just like being on an airplane.
It is.
Yeah. Absolutely.
How is it? And airplanes are still telling people how to put their seatbelts on.
Right.
How did how can they still be doing that?
I know. Although British Airways has a very funny video that they showed, because I flew British Airways to Greece a few months ago now, and they have the most hilarious video. It's all these British comics and British actors, and it's hilarious. I've never seen so many people glued to the video of how to put your seatbelt on. Very funny.
They got to be creative to keep people's attention, I guess. We're talking to Marilyn Preston, who is going to be at the Wilmette Theater at 8 p.m. with Jen Weigel. Her presentation, her speech, the event is called All Is Well.
Or Is It?
Or Is It? Is it?
Right. The art and science of personal well-being.
And I think it's going to be a wonderful event. We have Dr. Kathy Tynes. She is the president of the Illinois Medical Society. Did I get it right?
Illinois State Medical.
Illinois State Medical Society.
Sure.
And she's associate professor at Northwestern Medical and also a doctor over by there. Let's continue our conversation. We also wanted to talk about opioid addiction as well, and what doctors can do to be proactive in this. It's getting catastrophic for so many families across the country. More on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andre Doves on 720 WGN. It is Wellness Wednesday on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, and we are joined by Marilyn Preston, who has an event at the Wilmette Theater at 7 p.m. I would like to correct my earlier statements that it was happening at 8 p.m. It is at 7 p.m. at the Wilmette Theater over by there with Jen Weigel, and it's called All Is Well, or Is It? And it'll be an incredible conversation about taking care of yourself in many ways and what to be aware of. Right?
About personal well-being, not about how much you weigh or how many times you go to the gym.
Thank God.
Ah.
Yeah, thank goodness. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, all those things are also things that I just think about on my own. I don't need to have a presentation for them or a conversation about them. We also have Dr. Kathy Tynes in studio. She is the president of the Illinois State Medical Society, and she's associate professor at Northwestern Medical and a doctor over by there as well. And you wanted to talk a little bit about barbecue meat, because a lot of people are barbecuing this summer. Obviously, the weather has been perfect for it. And some people love to char their dogs and their brats. They like to get it so that it's all crispy and blackened. And I heard years ago, and being a Girl Scout who loves blackened marshmallows on her s'mores, I learned that that's not the best way to do it, is it?
Well, it's not necessarily just how you cook the meat, but what meat you're cooking. So the World Health Organization in 2014 issued a statement that classified both red meats and processed meats as a class 1 carcinogen. And I'm not sure that that's widely known. Other class 1 carcinogens are asbestos and cigarette smoking. So I'm not going to say they're equivalent in terms of their risk, but that gives you an idea of the level of evidence that there is to say that, you know, there is a definite association between eating these processed meats and red meats. The other thing is...
It's amazing they're still legal. Really?
Yeah.
Sure. Well, so are cigarettes. So, you know, you know, so the other piece of evidence is that, you know, though how you cook it does matter. So if you're cooking red meat, if you cook it on an open flame or you cook it at high heats, sadly, also increases the risk of cancer. So colorectal cancer is the main risk, as well as some gastric cancer. Processed meats includes deli meats, includes anything that's cured.
The stuff that tastes really good. I was just at a party and they had this incredible salami with like pepper, like a pepper sort of skin to it, and I couldn't stop eating it. I was almost tempted. I was in their backyard and I was tempted to go in their fridge to find the rest of it. But I kept myself. I controlled my... But there's something about it that's addictive, and that's part of the problem, isn't it? That's that saltiness. It's that wanting more of it.
Well, that's one of the problems with processed foods. Man, let me ask you a question. I had read recently that... colon cancer is skyrocketing among younger people.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's so shocking.
There's people been a 51% increase in colon cancer in people younger than 50.
But you're not supposed to get your first colonoscopy.
So there's a movement afoot to move that up. So,
and why do you think it is? Because I think part of it might be these processed foods.
It's the processed meats. It's the processed meats, and it's the red meats, and it's... I hate to put a damper on people's barbecues. The good news is that you can still grill your chicken. You can
still and your salmon,
and you don't have the same risk. So, you know, you can still barbecue, but hot dogs, processed meats,
not even the turkey dogs. I guess it's processed. I know. I'm always trying to find the silver lining to.
Well, you know, so you take a look when you're in the grocery store because things are being labeled now as uncured.
How about tofu dogs?
Okay.
I love chorizo. I love the chorizo. Is my favorite. One of my favorite things is chorizo. That's a really good,
delicious.
Really, really good. No, I'm not getting.
That is so shocking. This increase. It just goes to show you that what you eat is so important in terms of your well-being. So my other question is: are doctors educating themselves more in nutrition lately?
I think yes and no. I think there's. We really use our people who are dedicated dietitians and nutritionists as much as we can because, you know, there's a finite level of things that we can learn and deal with on a day-to-day basis. It's better to allow the experts to really educate patients. Having said that, the sad part is that it's really hard to get those dietitian appointments covered by insurance. So we're kind of caught, you know. Right. I do as much as I can. I print things out. I educate during my visit where I'm covering their vaccines and, you know, their mammograms and a million other things that I have to do in a wellness visit. You know, diet is a small portion of it. I don't have that amount of time. And really, when people need dedicated time, they should have it, and it should be covered by insurance. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, sadly, it's not.
Is an annual physical, I mean, which everyone should get with cholesterol check and whatnot, is that covered? I know it is for kids, but...
It is. That's mandated through the Affordable Care Act.
Okay.
Absolutely. So, you know, Medicare has a different spin on an annual wellness visit, but these preventive services are generally very well covered by most insurances.
And it's so hard, too, to when you take into consideration all the different things that you put... I get these... alerts all the time. The 7 foods you should eat to live longer, the 13 foods you should definitely avoid.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the things that always come up, the things that you should make sure you're getting enough of are your fruits, your vegetables, your healthy, you know, sort of grains, whether it's brown rice and things like that, and your beans.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you know, it's not that hard to figure out. You know, I tell people to use, when they're looking at their plate, half of it should be non-starchy vegetables. 1/4 of it should be a lean source of protein. The other portion should be their starch, and it should be a whole grain. And if you follow that, that's about as healthy as you can eat.
Yeah.
And what about real food versus processed foods?
Absolutely.
Real food. Absolutely. Yeah, real food.
And that's the kind of food that you get along the outside.
Yes, the periphery of the grocery store.
Right. So stay away from those inner aisles. That's where all the dangerous stuff is.
Right. Well, when we talk about the processed foods, we're talking about breads and crackers and a lot of the canned foods, a lot of the things. And when you talk about processed, it means didn't come off the vine to the store.
It's a food product.
Right.
And it has many chemicals and additives and hormone disruptors and all kinds of things that create huge medical problems. Kids are having diabetes and, outrageous numbers. They're showing heart disease, obesity. I started this syndicated column in 76. In 1980, 15% of the population was obese. And now it's two-thirds.
Oh, my God.
Is overweight. That is just shocking. And the cost of that, besides just the pain and, discomfort and going to have to go to the doctor and the expense. And yet, we still have these processed. Of course, people can choose whatever they'd like, but I think there's something really lacking in this communication between wonderful doctors and their patients in terms of the relationship between what they eat and how they feel.
And a lot of it has to do with marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what kids see on the TV is what they want. And, for some reason, I think a lot of people have this misconception that juice is the best thing for kids and just juice all day long. And it's pure sugar. There are a lot of empty calories that are consumed by Americans. And the liquid ones do not trigger a satiety reflex. So you can drink all the calories you want all day long and never feel full.
We have to take a break here. Marilyn, do you want to hang out some more? I know it's getting kind of late, but you're welcome to stay because we continue our Wellness Wednesday conversation. You will take leave of us, and that's completely understandable.
I have so enjoyed this, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to meet you all.
Well, we welcome you anytime. We'd love to have you back and by phone if you have something
you'd love
to update us on.
I'll come back at 2 a.m.
Okay. Fine, that's fine. We won't be here, but you're welcome to come back at 2 a.m. That's perfectly fine. That's Marilyn Preston, and she'll be at the Wilmette Theater at 7 p.m. with Jen Weigel for All Is Well, or Is It? And where can people find out more of the work that you're doing?
The book, All Is Well, my book is called, which is an Amazon bestseller, I'm happy to say.
Congratulations.
It is called All Is Well, The Art and Science of Personal Well-Being. It's on Amazon. And I'd love to have people read it and be in touch with me.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, we look forward to talking to you again. Have a lovely trip while you're here.
Thank you.
Or will you? It's time now for a quick break and then the news with Andrew Darlis on 720 WGN.
It's Wellness Wednesday.
I feel great.
I'm a doctor, not a performer. I don't have time for such nonsense.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case.
You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, and joining us tonight for Wellness Wednesday is Dr. Kathy Tynes, and we are taking your questions and comments at 312-981-7200. I want to get to a texter's question before we continue our conversation, Doc. They ask, is thermography covered? This is better or more definitive screening for women who are fibrocystic. And explain what thermography is and how it's used.
I'm sorry, but I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
That sounds a little bit alternative to me.
So
I could tell you breast MRI and ultrasounds are the alternative methods of screening for women who are at extremely high risk of breast cancer. Otherwise, other methods are not covered, and you have to prove that there's an elevated risk.
Right. When I have my mammograms done, I've had referrals to do ultrasounds and MRIs because I have I do have fibrocystic breast disease. And explain actually for those who don't know what fibrocystic breasts are.
So that's where the breasts are denser, and there's an excess of glandular tissue, and it tends to make the breasts the consistency a little bit more lumpy bumpy, so it's really more difficult to do a breast exam because there's always something that you can feel, and the other thing is that their breasts are denser and the mammograms are harder to read.
I get a callback this year too, and everyone freaks out when they get a callback. Of course,
15% of mammograms are called back.
But she said I did do the MRI or the 3D, I guess it would be, and she said now because you've been called back and you've had that, the radiologist said that you can now request that, but you can't normally request that. It's only if you get a callback, right? Or is that changed?
So 3D is kind of a an enhanced mammogram, and it's available as usual screening in some places. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on the institution.
Okay.
So, you know, standard mammogram, most of them are digital nowadays, which, you know, is a heightened level of screening. And then the 3D is another additional level. And so those are available to most women, depending on the institution. And if you have a BRCA mutation or a strong family history of breast cancer, then typically you can ask for and get the insurance to cover either an MRI or an ultrasound. Ultrasound being preferred.
I think for peace of mind, oh my gosh, because you get the results immediately, mm-hmm. as opposed to waiting a few days after a callback. So,
right. This listener who asked about thermography gave me a screenshot of the definition for thermography.
Good. I'll learn something too.
The use of thermograms is to study heat distribution in structures or regions, for example, in detecting tumors. So I'm not sure. If that's your job is to make sure that people get the screenings that they need to refer them to those technicians who perform those exams.
To the appropriate level of screening, and that's, you know, different depending on, you know, what your risk level is.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So we also have heard, obviously, a lot of conversation about what catastrophic effects the opioid abuse epidemic has had on so many families. And if it's not affecting you, people think it sounds like background noise. Oh, you know, those are just addicts, or they don't know when to stop. Even the President of the United States has said they should just stop for the most part.
So, yeah, it really is a tragedy. And here's the thing, you know, there have been waves of addiction problems throughout our country over the years. So this is not the first opioid crisis that we've had. In the 1970s, it was heroin. It was mm-hmm. inner city. I think what's garnering more attention is, you know, certainly the magnitude, but also the population that's involved. You know, we're seeing rural as well as urban populations affected, and that people haven't been, you know, used to that as being a problem. So where does this come from? There's a lot of speculation. But, you know, the fact of the matter is it's a huge crisis, and we really need to react to it. And it's an all hands on deck approach, including education, including, you know, there's been legislation in the state of Illinois that allows people to be able to get Narcan, which is the reversal agent. You can go to a pharmacy and get that without a prescription. So if you or a loved one has opioids, either prescribed or unprescribed, you should have Narcan in the house so that you can reverse it quickly and save someone's life. Now police, in addition to fire personnel, can carry Narcan and administer it. Other life-saving things is, you know, certainly just decreasing the prescribing. In Illinois, our prescribing has gone down 20% based on education and based on enhanced tools to be able to monitor prescriptions. So there's a database that's available throughout the state of Illinois that allows physicians to check where and when a patient in their office might have gotten an opioid before they came to their office. So that cuts back on patients who doctor shop. They go from doctor to doctor getting opioid prescriptions. So we have a better handle on, you know, people who are abusing the system and who are getting opioids that are potentially going to get out on the streets. So here's the thing. Even though our prescribing has gone down 20%, mm-hmm. deaths from opioid overdoses have gone up 36%.
What do you think accounts for that? If it's
here's really where the deaths are coming from. It's the synthetic drugs that are on the street. So there's synthetic fentanyl. It's manufactured in China. It's highly concentrated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we talked about the heroin epidemic back in the 1970s. It used to cost $30 to get a hit of heroin, and it was 29% pure. Now it costs $4 to get a hit. And it's 80% pure.
Oh my God.
So it's that much more addictive, and it's that much more lethal, and it's that much easier to overdose on. So that's really what's driving, you know, where it began, you know, definitely a lot of different factors that cause that. But where it is right now is driven by the street drugs that are available, and they're highly right. potent, they're cheap, and they're very dangerous.
What are the ages of
all of, age groups?
Right. So it's not just seniors who have or teenagers who are.
We are seeing it even in the senior population. Yeah. Absolutely. So you can't really stereotype, you know, the people who are afflicted by an opioid epidemic.
I read that it takes only 2 days to become addicted to opioids. after being prescribed.
And I've read that it takes only 20 Norco pills.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, whatever you have in your medicine cabinet, we talked about this before, get it out of there. If you have leftover prescriptions, don't leave it around as temptation for someone else to come and pick it up and put it on the street or take it themselves.
And you can Google different ways to get rid of. I know there are pharmacies that will accept your expired or old prescriptions.
Police stations, fire stations. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of different places you can.
You shouldn't flush them down the toilet, right?
You should ask that. Yeah. No, she says it. I mean, if you have somebody who might be vulnerable right. to taking your prescriptions, whatever it takes to get them out of the house, including flushing them. And of course, then we had an onslaught of callers right. who were very angry at Dr. Kathy Timeless.
Don't do it.
Even though it's on the DEA's website. But okay.
When I used to live in my condo building, they would have, you know, like shredding week or whatever, but they would have recycling week, and they would have you would bring
pill bottles.
Exactly. Yeah. Of used or rather expired.
Right. Expired or unused.
So you wouldn't dump them down the
right. Right.
The sink of the toilet.
And there are more and more. There are these boxes available in different places. Mm-hmm. Some pharmacies have them. Some doctor's offices have them.
Right.
So be mindful of what's in your medicine cabinet. If you don't need it, get rid of it. Yeah. It can harm more than it can help.
Yeah.
That's good advice for anybody, because you just think, well, what if I want it later? You know, that really helped me get through my broken arm or that toothache that I had. And you think, okay, you know, I might need that later. That's what a lot of people really think. Or they give it to somebody else. Oh, you know what helped me out? Take these pills. It'll yeah. really make you feel better, don't they?
Right. And that's called diversion. So when drugs leave your hands and they go into someone else's hands, that's illegal, especially with a controlled substance like that. So you have to be really mindful of, you know, it can do more harm than good to,
right.
to give it to somebody else or to allow it to be accessible to somebody else.
By the way, our friend really wants us to know about thermography. I'm getting a lot of links. We appreciate the information. It is something that is not necessarily in the, you know, a part of what the conversation is. But, oh, here, by the way, didn't know. Oh, here, we have a listener from. Let me take this text. I'll see if I can put it together for you before the end of the show. But it's somebody who was given pain pills after having back surgery, which I think is very common for folks. 312-981-7200. Give us a call or text us at that number, 312-981-7200. Remember, you can follow the show at Patty V Show on Facebook. More after this on 720 WGN. It's almost midnight. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Joining us is Dr. Kathy Timeless, the president of the Illinois State Medical Society. And we are getting some text that I wanted to see if I could go through some of these about we were talking about opioids, and I didn't know that it was affecting my life till my best friend overdosed. And I think that happens to people where somebody in your life, you just had no idea because they can mask it. You know, they're trying to medicate something in their lives. There's something going on that soothes or is appealing to them. At some point, the sensation becomes something they're chasing, isn't it?
You know, I think the origins of addiction are complex, and, you know, people do self-medicate for a lot of different psychiatric or emotional issues. And so, you know, you have to keep that in mind, that there's a genetic predisposition, there's environmental factors, there's emotional factors, and there's access. So, it, you know, there's multiple factors that are involved that create addiction. So to say that there's one overwhelming problem or cause is misleading. You know, I think everyone's story is different, but you know, the commonality is having access to these drugs and having cheap access to these drugs,
right? And this is a tragic story. She said her friend, when her friend overdosed, it was in front of her autistic son and 3-year-old daughter, 2 years after having back surgery, and she was cut off the pain pills and went to street drugs, and nobody knew about that.
So there's been some attention being paid to this recently, because, as I mentioned, I cited you the statistics. Even though the prescription drugs are going down, the overdose deaths are going up, and there are some who really link some of that to physicians who are now cutting back on their prescribing, and for good reason. You know, we don't want to contribute to the problem, But in some instances, that's driving people who are already addicted or who have a need for these medications to the street drugs instead, which are much more dangerous. So we have to be mindful of that. We have to be careful that we're treating people's pain adequately, or that we're treating people's addiction adequately. And that's where we need more help. We need more treatment centers. We need more access to medically assisted therapy, because that's been proven to be the most effective treatment.
How do you alleviate the fears too? Because my mom last year broke her pelvis, and they gave her Norco. She was only on it for a couple of days, but she was, you know, she was worried. She said, "I don't want to become addicted." I said, "You're not. You know, you're right under the doctor's care and whatnot." But how do you alleviate some of those fears?
Sure, as long as you're using it to treat your pain, you're not likely to become addicted. And typically, you know, people who are using it for pain aren't getting a high out of it. They're just functioning. They're just feeling okay. Right. You know, it's when people are using it to feel a high or to mask really emotional pain, that's when we see problems with addiction, because, you know, it's no longer being used what it's intended for.
Right.
And in that sense, though, the people who are benefiting from it are probably afraid that they're not going to be able to use some of the pain meds that are helping them because of people who are abusing it. Is that a risk?
So we don't have painometers. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't really have an objective measure for, you know, people who really need it to treat their chronic pain versus people who are either abusing or who are really using it to treat their emotional pain. And so, you know, we try to be cautious with everyone, and we try to, you know, assess the risk of addiction, assess, you know, where on the spectrum they are. Is this chronic physical pain? Is there emotional pain? Is there some addiction going on? And that can be difficult to do. And so, you know, sometimes we err on the side of caution and not give patients opioids, and, you know, hopefully not with bad consequence, but there may be bad consequence. I mean, we're always trying to do the right thing in medicine, and to say that, you know, we're fueling this problem or created this problem really has created in a lot of ways a backlash. And there have been some articles written about this, and patients are being cut off and not getting the medication that they need. And that's not helpful either. It doesn't help the patient, and it certainly doesn't help people who have addiction.
My neighbor gave his 16-year-old son a Norco for a sore throat. What? Why would anyone get, are people using Norco for something other than an overdose or for reasons that's not necessary?
Norco or Narcan?
It says Norco.
Norco is an opiate. Yeah, that's a form of
for pain management.
Yeah, it's
for a sore throat. Right. They said I did not react, but inside I was freaking out. I'm going to say, should you say something when parents are giving their, I guess, let's take a break here. I know that now some calls are coming in. We are going to check in with our friends of Portage Park, by the way. There's a rummage sale coming up in Portage Park that we want to talk about that some folks might want to get involved in. I know Andrea was doing a segment on WGN-TV News about garage sales around the city. So yeah. I want to find out how people are doing with their rummage sales and garage sales this summer as well. And more questions and comments for Dr. Kathy Tynes at 312-981-7200. Let's take a break here, and then news with Andrea Dawes on 720 WGN. Thank you so much for hanging out. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Dawes live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's a beautiful night in Chicago. Andrea, you said I missed the Navy Pier fireworks.
Yeah,
did you get a chance to see them?
I did. Yeah, Adam and I were watching in here tonight. They were beautiful.
You and Adam like hanging out during when the games are on.
I have something to do. I have someone to talk to. No, I know.
I'm glad that you got your screens changed. Now it's
I know.
See,
my screens
now
are
I know
fixed.
Why you're palling around with Adam. It's like,
and now I can look at you instead of like looking away and being rude. Now I actually have like a direct visual of you, but you'll be happy to know the fireworks that they shot off from Navy Pier, they
yes.
moved them north.
Mm-hmm.
So now if you stand on that side of the room, which is, I know, great for radio, you'll be able to see them. On the 4th of July, we had everybody crowded in the room, but they were shooting them, you know, a little bit more south.
I think because it was
now.
The 4th of July and they were doing a bigger one,
yeah.
and they were trying to get more coverage for people who were going to be down at the beach.
Right. And this was right off the pier, so we had a nice visual.
Excellent. I you know, it's one of those things, there's a lot of things in the summer. Fireworks are one of those things you want to make sure you get to enjoy some of that at some point, or whatever it is that you love. Maybe it's chasing the ice cream truck. For me, it is when my family will let me is to pull over and go to a garage sale. I know Andrea covered some of those on WGN-TV, and I wanted to check in with our friends of Portage Park. Suzanne's on the line to tell us about an event happening this weekend, because I know there are a lot of parents like me, Suzanne, who need to empty their basements and their garages because of all the stuff our kids have grown out of. What are you guys planning for this weekend?
So I'm Suzanne, and we are planning a big kids' sale. Exactly like you said, our houses all get overrun with all of our kids' stuff. And, you know, there are all those different garage sales in all different places that you're driving around to. Basically, our goal is to bring all of that together into one place for easy shopping and easy selling. So we're doing a kids' sale at Portage Park in the gym this Sunday from 10 to 2. So people have reserved tables where they're able to bring in their kids' stuff that's overtaking their attics and their closets and their basements, and be able to sell some of that stuff to a new user.
And see, that's cool.
It is. It's a wonderful idea. How many years have you guys been doing the sale?
So, you know what? This is actually the first time that
really?
We're going to be doing it.
Wonderful.
It happened a few years ago, but I wasn't involved in the organization at that point. But this is sort of the new rebranding of it and the first time with all new people coming in to sell and all new people running it. So we're really, really excited about it.
And this, so Portage Park, for folks who aren't familiar, at least the actual Portage Park is at Irving and Irving, what's the cross street? Is it Austin?
Central.
Yes.
Yep, Central.
So the field house is there. It's a huge park, by the way. Is it in the field house?
It's in the field house, yeah. So in the gym, like up the very front steps, you'll head straight into the gym, and that's where it's being held.
I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of balloons on the path so that people can follow the signs.
We will make sure to have signs out. We'll make sure to have balloons out. We'll make sure that everyone knows about it because we want people to, you know, come from all over, but especially people that are already in the park. We want to make sure that everyone knows exactly where to go. And we also, the Friends of Portage Park, the group that we sort of, you know, support the park and do fundraising for the park, we have our farmers market going on Sunday as well.
Oh, perfect.
So it's just going to be a really good day to be in the park.
I love this idea because, you know, when you're a kid, when you're a kid, you want all the newest stuff and you want the coolest thing, or at least that's how a lot of my friends were. I had some stuff that was rummage sale and some stuff that my mom made sure was really nice, whether it was from Marshall Fields or, do you remember iMagnon? Fancy store my mom would buy dresses from. But some of my stuff came from, you know, rummage sale, some of the things around our house. And I love the idea of finding treasures, and when it's for your kids,
yeah.
I'm guessing you've got everything from winter clothes, to sporting equipment, to toys and games. Do you have?
Yeah, one thing that's nice about kind of when we're holding it is people can still sell some of their summer stuff because, you know, we're still in the summer months.
Yes,
but we're trying not to think about fall, but it's upon us now that it's August. So, you know, a lot of people will have all of their fall and winter items, too. And it'll be clothes. It'll be, you know, people can bring in bigger things as well. So high chairs and extra saucers and all of those things that, you know, are expensive for someone to purchase new. But that a lot of people have taken really great care of. And all they really need is just a place to put it. And, you know, someone to give it to rather than just throwing it away.
Oh, my God. I have a 6-year-old goddaughter and her 7-year-old brother, and toys are so expensive. This would be a perfect place to pick up some toys.
Well, and things that maybe you haven't seen for a long time. I've got some great Fisher-Price stuff. Now, my next question is, Suzanne, if people want to buy a table and set up their own rummage sale in your rummage sale, can they still do that or is it too late?
So through tomorrow, tomorrow's the last day that we're taking people to be sellers for the rummage sale. And to do that, they would go to our website, which is www.friendsofportagepark.org. And there's a link right there on the front page where they can sign up for a table. It's $25 for a table. That $25 goes to our organization, which purchases things for the park. So it goes to pay for events. We do movies in the park. It goes to pay for things like the farmers market. It also goes for buying things. Like we just bought new gym mats for the gym to use for their programming. So that's what the $25 goes for. And then people set their own prices on all of the clothes and toys and things that they're selling. And whatever people make off of selling their own things, they get to keep.
You could find such great things. My mom, I remember, I was scarred for life. I was a big Star Wars geek. Mm-hmm. She gave away she sold my Millennium Falcon, which was the big one.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and Star Wars toys, too.
I know how she's going to make it up to you. eBay.
I would assume so.
I know.
Especially now that probably some old things, but now with the reboot of Star Wars, I'm sure, I mean, it's so big right now. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm sure people will have some of the older original stuff too.
I'm going to come look, Suzanne.
Think of
for my godkids.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Think of how much that would fetch on eBay now,
I'm
right?
I'm not kidding you, right?
I know.
Oh, except it was played with. It was, you know, used.
Yeah.
It wasn't still in the box.
Yeah, not still.
Yeah. I know, right?
It means something to someone, even if it's not worth a lot played with.
Right.
And now, is there an entrance fee to get into the rummage sale itself?
It's $1.
Oh, well,
so $1 to come
crazy
into
with
the $1 to come into the rummage sale, and that's just for adults. So if you're, you know, an adult and you're coming to shop and you want to bring your kids along, you don't have to pay for them.
Okay, excellent. And now, do you think people are going to be haggling at this rummage sale? Because that's when it gets to be a little strange.
They're invited to. So since each person, whatever, you know, if you're coming in as a seller, since each person gets to keep whatever they make, if they, you know, set a price for something that you know, they're not getting, but they really want to sell the item, people are welcome to lower prices or talk to people about different prices. So that'll be kind of up to each seller what they want to do. So we'll see.
And someone's asking if there is parking. If I'm not mistaken, there is a parking lot plus street parking in the area. Is that right?
There is. So there's a parking lot off of Berteaux Avenue, which is on the north side of the park. It's right by the tennis courts. And then there is also street parking on Berteaux and on Central. And there's lots of street parking just around in that area as well.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a pretty convenient place to get to. By the way, Suzanne, there's a listener who wants to give us some trivia about Portage Park. Hi, Chuck. How are you doing?
Oh, okay.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi there.
By walking the sidewalk around Portage Park, you've walked a mile.
Really? Did you know that, Suzanne? If you walk the sidewalk at Portage, you've walked a mile?
I knew that it was about a mile. I didn't know that it was that official.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got it down to the exact measurement there, Chuck.
Well, I've heard that. I haven't measured it.
Now, feels like a mile.
Now I feel like I need to make it official, don't you, Suzanne?
I think so. I say we make it official.
I say we make it
official. We'll have to get a big tape measure and go out and measure it.
Well, fortunately, Chuck, now I've got GPS on our phones. I'm pretty sure I'll be able to get it precise because I go walking all the time now. So, you know what, Chuck? I am going to go ahead and verify that for you. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. Have a great night, my friend.
Okay, thanks.
You will, of course.
Have a nice Chuck.
I've run around that park, and I do believe he's probably right. Here's
it's
another piece of trivia.
Park to run around, and I think that's about right.
Oh, it's gorgeous. I mean, the beautiful trees are old growth trees, are just absolutely gorgeous. So I grew up in the neighborhood, and that's where I learned how to swim, was in the Portage Park pool, which is an Olympic sized swimming pool.
Oh, cool.
And they actually held Olympic trials back when I was a kid, back in the 60s.
It's an amazing pool. The indoor pool is helpful in the summer, in the winter when you're trying to stay in shape. That's where I was swimming this past winter. The outdoor pool, my outdoor pool was Norwood. I always felt like I had a chip on my shoulder because Portage was so much cooler as far as being a much bigger pool, at least. But
huge the diving board. The big diving board.
Oh yeah, the diving. They have the whole diving well with the big platforms and everything. It's kind of amazing and scary looking.
Do they still have the high platform, the high dive?
It's still there. Yeah,
wow.
I've never seen anybody jump off of it, so I'm not sure if there are hours where people can actually do that. But it's very daunting looking, but it's very cool to have.
That must be why they were doing the Olympic trials, by the way, because that's an Olympic height high dive.
I mean,
that's one of the high it's a high platform, not a diving board.
It's all Olympic regulation, so that's why they used it.
I always, when I was a kid, you'd always hear those tales about somebody doing a belly flop and, you know, their skin ripping open and stuff and being filleted. Yeah, you never heard that? Yeah, I always heard those rumors, so I always...
I've heard it. It's just a bad memory. It didn't happen to me, but I've heard of that happening.
I don't know. I have to find out now if that's an urban myth, because that seems like something that the people talked about on the Northwest side. Well, Suzanne, I hope you guys have a successful rummage sale this weekend. We'd love to talk to you again about things going on with the Friends of Portage Park. Again, give us the website is friendsofportagepark.org.
That's correct. Yeah, friendsofportagepark.org.
And again, don't forget, it's the farmer's market, plus you can get some stuff for kids in your life. You can buy some anything. You know, there's going to be a little bit of everything for everybody. And the rummage sale goes from 10 to 2 p.m. at the field house at Portage Park. There'll be signs and balloons, I'm sure, and there is parking off Berteaux as well as street parking. Suzanne, have a great weekend and good luck on your event.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're really looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm so glad we were able to connect, and we'll talk to you again soon. Have a great week.
You too.
Thank you. More conversation when we get back. We have more texts coming in about people holding on to pills for a while. And I want to find out, our friend John Culver's in the studio as well, John Culver Esquire. Maybe we'll get to some legal issues when we come back in a little bit as well. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlos on 720 WGN. To the Patty Vasquez Show and with Andrea Darlos, and joining us in studio is Dr. Kathy Tynes and John Culver Esquire. I was talking about what I felt perhaps was an urban myth from my childhood, that when you belly flop off of a high diving board, I thought, like, even I was just afraid to go off the high dive at Norwood Park Pool, and thinking of that high platform at Portage Park, I'd heard that you could be filleted, like you'd be ripped open. But John, you were saying that if you fall off of any, if you hit water or hit anything at a high speed, you're bound to possibly get hurt severely.
If not die. Yeah, certainly.
Wow, great. Now my childhood fears are all coming back to the surface. It's all true.
But not at the pool.
Not at the pool. I don't know that it ever happened in Chicago. When I became a lifeguard, we were trained at Wells Park, and then we were trained at Eckerd Park. We trained all over the city in different facilities to be in different situations, whether it was at the beach, indoor pools, outdoor pools. And we heard a lot of horrifying stories, mostly about what happens to a body when it's been in the water for a long time. And I felt so badly when this gentleman fell off a boat during the Mackinac races, because my mind went immediately to what they would do for us is when there was a missing person in Lake Michigan. Every morning we would get an alert about where they were kind of estimating a body might wash up. And we had this thing, it's called a thumper. And that meant that, you know, be aware that a body might hit your boat. And that was called exactly.
Wow.
See, so when you're 16 and they start telling you those kinds of things. But I mean, they went through how much decay can happen to a body when it's been in water for a long time. So all these fears that I had as a child came back when I was a lifeguard again. And so you've Googled what can happen when someone belly flops. So
yeah.
Let's go from the less scary stuff.
So yeah, you'll get bruises. Mm-hmm. You can get some pretty significant bruising. The whole filleting your belly open, I really didn't see any reference
good.
To that.
I'm glad. Okay, yeah. So that urban myth for me and Suzanne, because honestly, Suzanne and I are from the same neighborhood, so I'm pretty sure when we were kids, somebody was spreading that rumor.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, rarely people can get more serious injuries to their internal organs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that's being caused obviously by, you know, the sheer force against the water, but also a deceleration injury. So when you are going at a fast speed and you stop suddenly, organs are still moving within your abdominal cavity, and they slam against, you know, the front of the abdominal cavity because they're still moving and the rest of you stopped.
Right.
And that injury is more likely to happen in smaller children because they don't have as much abdominal fat to cushion it.
Okay, speaking of kids, I have to ask, is it an urban myth about going in the pool or going in the water after you eat? Because when we were kids, I think it was just that it's used to, you know, to keep us not from going back in the water so fast.
No one wants to go and watch you after you eat.
Right,
you swimming,
exactly. Right.
They want to sit and relax.
Exactly. Yeah.
The myth was that if you went in the water too soon, you'd get a cramp.
Or a belly ache or something. Yeah.
You know, so physiologically speaking, after you eat, blood rushes to your gut to digest your food. That's just normal physiologic behavior. And so, you know, theoretically, if you're expending all that blood and diverting it away from your gut, where it's supposed to be to do its work to digest your food, then perhaps you could get a stomach cramp. So, I think there's at least a theoretical basis for that, based on your physiology, but is there science or are there studies being done about it? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. John brought up off the air about swallowing watermelon seeds or swallowing gum. Was it the one that you brought up?
Because if you swallowed gum, you'd have worms in your stomach.
I never heard worms.
Or it took 7 years to digest.
That one I heard.
The reverse, I believe, is true as well. So if you swallow worms, you had gum in your stomach. Try it at home.
Awful. Don't try it, yeah.
I was told that if I swallowed lemon seeds, that a lemon plant would sprout in my belly.
Yep.
Yes, that kind of, and like watermelon seeds. What kind of, do you guys remember any, now that you're a doctor, you're like, okay, these are all very silly things that people told you. Yes.
Ooh, I'm trying to.
I mean, swallowing gum isn't good, but you're going to
pass
it. It's not like you're, of course, you don't want to watch for it. That seems a little bit.
I just remember stepping on a crack will break your mother's back, so that does not seem to have any scientific basis to
see,
it.
See, but that's superstition and scaring a kid from swallowing things, though. You know what
I mean?
Two different things. Although I used to, this was so strange. I remember when I had Griffin, and toddlers put everything in their mouths.
Oh, God.
They're so curious about everything, from mulch on the playground, dental floss. Griffin would get my dental, like, I remember one time he was in my bed, and I realized that he'd gotten the dental floss from one of my drawers, and he, you know, when a kid realizes he's doing something he's not supposed to, he, like, crawled in my bed and hid under the pillows, and he was eating the dental floss. Oh. And, of course, I Google it, and there is, of course, a case where a child had swallowed a ball of dental floss and it had gotten stuck in their system and it got infected because he didn't pass it. So now I had to call the doctor and they told me I had to look through his poop every day. And I'm like, when's he gonna pass the ball of dental floss?
No. So gross.
It was so minty fresh. I mean,
he just thought it was funny. He thought it was like candy or something. He's like, right? and then look at his, he's like, ha ha ha. I'm like, oh great, this is how my kid dies, is laughing while eating dental floss.
You know what though, as kids we would eat grass. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would sit out there and someone would say, you know, eat a blade of grass, you know, it would be
yes.
a dare.
Well, the stuff that kids do grass. Nowadays, my goodness, with the Tide Pods,
oh my God,
and snorting condoms, and
okay, that I couldn't believe those stories, especially the condom story.
Cotton balls, swallowing cotton
and these
balls.
Are these are kids in college, or these are
right these are older kids, these are toddlers
better, right, that you don't
it's
eat a Tide Pod
or, it's the stupidest possible thing. What would be the worst possible thing you could eat? A Tide Pod.
Oh, it was the craziest.
Right.
Well, and I do remember doing incredibly stupid things. But as far as swallowing things, you shouldn't. When I saw Griffin grab a penny and put it in his mouth, I remembered that I swallowed. And I don't think my mom knows this, but when I was like 3 or 4, I remember swallowing a penny. Mm-hmm. Just wanting to, and I'm fine, but you're not a slot machine. I don't know what I thought was going to happen with that. It's not like I was going to get any change back.
But it's weird.
I swallow one too.
Yeah, what is that?
As far as I know, it's still there.
Yeah,
right.
And it's a penny patch now.
That's
oddly
where you get, that's where you get sinus problems. No, so my godson, my cousin had him in the back seat of the car. She looked in the rearview mirror and she got scared. She thought he had a bloody nose. He took Tic Tacs, orange Tic Tacs, and put them up his nose. And she's like, why would you do that? And I think he's like 5 years old. Why would you do that? And he's like, oh, because I could.
Yeah, no. I babysat one time. Someone, this kid shoved a battery. He had like one of those like AAA batteries. He's like laughing about being able to fit a battery up his nose. I'm like, this is how I go to jail. I'm 13 years old. I'm going to jail for letting a kid put a battery up his nose. Esmeralda, did you ever do anything or eat anything silly? Do you remember anything shoving?
You know, soap always looks so appetizing.
Did you eat the soap?
I think I tasted it.
Yeah.
I had to eat it when I lied to my mom.
Ooh, oh, did you?
Really?
Wait, your mom washed your mouth out with soap for lying?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a myth.
I never lied again, and I...
Wow. So tell me, how does this work? Was it a bar of soap?
Yeah, was it
liquid
bar of soap? It was awful.
So
yeah.
She stuck it in your mouth and kind of rubbed it around?
Yeah,
in there?
It wasn't that. I mean, nowadays... I mean, because we all swallow soap, you know, when you're in the shower by accident, you know, with shampoo and stuff. But no, you had to, like, open your mouth and then eat the bar of soap. Or, like, kind of take a... Not a bite, but just put the bar of soap kind of in your mouth, and then that was it. And then of course it's like,
it's bitter.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Now it'd be a Tide Pod.
Yeah, right. Eat a Tide Pod.
Oh, man.
Well, they say you eat a bushel of dirt in your lifetime, but you eat almost all of it as a kid.
Almost. Well, the thing is, I could not keep Griffin from eating stuff off the playground and licking things.
Well, so here's the thing is, they actually did a study. Uh-huh. You know how you have that 3 second rule? So there was a study that was done in a college cafeteria, okay? And they compared different foods, and they took foods that had been on the floor for various different times, and they plated them. So they put them on an agar plate to see if they grew bacteria. And it's really more like a 30-second rule.
You have 30 seconds to eat something?
Oh, you have 30 seconds before it picks up bacteria. Okay. I'm not kidding you.
I'm not buying
excellent.
That.
Excellent.
This is science.
Maybe
science.
Okay, hold on a second, Andrea. Wait a minute. Little Miss wipe her microphone down every time she walks in here.
I knew you were going to say that.
Hold on a second.
Wait.
You drop food on the floor and you're like, it's probably still good. Wait, you don't want to touch anything, but you're going to put stuff in your mouth that's dropped on the floor. And people are wearing wearing shoes. They're dragging in pigeon poop, and you know they are. Next time you eat something off the floor, think of that woman at Irving, at the Irving Blue Line, and people walking through that pigeon poop. You go ahead and you pick it. I don't care if it's 1 second.
That was in college cafeteria. Can you think of a dirtier place? College cafeteria floor.
Yes, I can. But
public
anyway,
bathroom floor.
Many dirty places.
Were you more likely to like drop something and eat it again?
We are getting texts. Did your mom or dad ever wash your mouth out with soap? But also, what things do you believe that you found out were either true or false? Apparently, I thought it was a 15-second rule, but I still don't pick it up off the floor.
If it's at home.
Okay. Do you wear your shoes in the house or take your shoes off?
I never wear my shoes in the house.
Okay, then you probably wear Swiffer on your socks.
No, I wear socks or go barefoot.
I bet she's got Swiffer. She's like cleaning while she walks. I'm disinfecting my entire house.
No, I don't clean the house, but the house is spotless. Trust me.
I believe you. And this needs Purell, and this needs Purell. No. In your house, if you're not wearing shoes, okay, I buy it. Although if you go barefoot, I don't want to know. It's time now for a news. 312-981-7200. If you have some urban myths or things that you were told that you believed when you were a kid, give us a call or text us. 312-981-7200. My mom always said a little bird told me. I wanted to kill that bird. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andre Darlis, and the opinions of our physician, Dr. Kathy Tynes, may not be the opinions of the show, because here's the thing. Someone just sent me a link to a 2016 study that says food is contaminated instantly, and I'm with that person.
Oh, all right. I stand corrected.
It depends on where it drops.
It depends on where, I know.
It depends on whether it's wet or dry.
Right.
And
where you drop it.
Exactly. So Andrea was saying that she, her mother washed her mouth out with soap when she lied. My dad actually had his mouth washed out with soap when he cussed for the first time in front of his mom. Mm-hmm. And I fortunately did not. Did your parents ever wash your, you didn't do have that happen to you. John did it, did you?
No, it did not, but I was subjected to corporal punishment, which was quite popular at the time.
Yeah.
Catholic cousins were spanked
and stuff. I was never spanked. I was never hit. My grandma had a wooden spoon that she would wave at us.
Yeah.
But
to threaten you?
Yeah.
I don't want you, if you have family listening and you don't want to share any family. Oh, sorry about that.
A priest went after me with a hockey stick in high school.
What?
Yes, I was swatted with a hockey stick.
Can you watch too much Don Rickles? Because he's like, come here, you hockey puck.
Father Enright.
Father Enright. Oh, no. Wow. Michael, were you, and I know that your family also listens to the show, so if you don't want to divulge any family secrets, you don't have to.
No, I divulge away. Yeah, growing up was very different, because I think I was right on the cusp of when they started treating kids really well and they started saying spanking was bad for you.
Yes.
That my parents were all for, just teaching you a lesson. I also had the soap in the mouth, and that wasn't very fun. And I had the bar soap.
Wow.
So I remember chunks of, biting it when I was late. I can't remember what I did.
I have a friend who we were talking about that one time, and she said the same thing. She said that her mom washed her mouth out, and she was forced to bite it.
Yeah.
And then, when she pulled the soap out, she's like, there's little pieces of soap in your mouth. She's it's horrible.
Oh, thank God. That's never happened to me.
Me neither. My mom never, ever hit me.
There was a lot of yelling.
Yes.
And lots of yelling.
Yeah, a lot of drama.
My mom grew up in a tavern, so there were some cuss words, too. Yep.
Yeah. I got spanked once when I was 5 years old by my dad. My dad spanked me. Oh. And he was really, really, he was really mad at me. And that's something you don't forget. And and here's the thing. He was wrong. I just want everyone to know my dad was.
Oh yeah, he was wrong.
Well, it's that much more powerful when it's a very seldom thing. I think if kids are getting beat all the time, they lose respect. They lose respect for the beating, and they lose respect for their parents.
Oh no, I lost respect for my dad right away. because I knew he was beat at five. I knew he was being irrational. He was, okay, so here was it was the stupidest thing. I went to Onahan on the far northwest side of Chicago. And it was kindergarten, and my dad had made a big deal about letting me walk home from school alone. He said, you can walk home with your, and I remember the whole thing. It was Raina. There was a girl named Raina who lived down the street from me. And he goes, you and Raina can walk home. I trust you. You two just walk home together, right? And now as an adult, I get that maybe he was scared or whatever, but he ended up showing up that day, and I was mad at him. And I said, you said I could walk home by myself. So I walked a block ahead. ahead of him. I didn't like run away. And he said that I was disrespectful to him. And when we got home, he spanked me, but hard. And I was like, no, man, you said I could walk home by myself.
I was right.
I was five and I was right.
You reneged on our deal. God.
Exactly. Here's the thing. If he wanted to say, hey, I just got nervous for you, I just wanted to show up, whatever it was, if we'd had a conversation, but he just got mad at me like that.
A conversation.
My son's the same way as I was. I'm like, no, dude, you're wrong. Not dude, but I was like, daddy, you're wrong. Right. And he got mad at me for being disrespectful. He always said I was too, I had a smart mouth on me.
Yeah.
I know.
It serves you well.
But you know what, though?
Thank you.
I have to say, so I don't have kids, so I can't really judge this, but it seems to me that the timeouts don't work.
Yes, it does.
It does.
I have seen kids go in the corner and then, basically they'll put their nose in the corner and then go right back to pushing their sister down the stairs.
My timeouts, I don't know, but Griffin, what we did, and I did love that show. Do you remember The Nanny on ABC?
Yes.
So she would do
Super Nanny. Yeah.
She would do, not Fran Drescher. What are you talking about?
The Super Nanny.
Right?
No, not the sitcom, the reality series where she she would go into homes where kids were really like, whether it was not going to bed, and the bedtime thing really helped me out a lot, where you don't talk to your child, you just walk them back to bed and you're very quiet. There was a point where I would just sit in Griffin's room because he always wanted to talk, he wanted to chat. I know, go figure. And the Nanny on ABC was a reality series where parents were just at their wits' end with how to take care of their kids, and it was a British woman too.
Yes.
She was Mary Poppins, basically.
Saved my life. She did.
Right. The timeouts were based on the age of the child. So it was, and it wasn't just like just timeout and they go sit there. It was supposed to be directed timeout. You had a timeout space, and you had a conversation about why they were in timeout, what had happened. Like with Griffin, it would be, he hit me once when he was 25 months old, maybe a little bit over two. So not somebody who's responsible, but a child who can say he's sorry, right, and accept that that's not how we behave. And that was something that we would do. We would be very specific about why, at anywhere we were. If we were in a grocery store, I would sit down, and it wasn't like I would walk around and do something else. I would sit down, and we're not talking. We are having a timeout. And I know that it depends on how you do it, but kid got a perfect score on his CPS stuff and he reads the Bible every night and tells me, like, I said something. I was at dinner with our aunt for Declan's birthday, and I said something kind of snide, and Griffin said to me later, he goes, mommy, that tone was a little unnecessary, wasn't it, with Aunt Josie? I mean, like, that's my kid.
Wow.
So
smack.
No. Does he give you timeouts now? Yeah. Or?
Huh?
Does he give you timeouts?
Does he give me timeouts? He probably should. Probably wanted to at
home. She's on the other foot now, isn't it?
Yeah, he probably wanted to at the Home Depot. Mommy, you haven't made a choice. I think you need a timeout right now. But it depends. It depends on if you back up your timeouts, I think. But I've never wanted to hit him. There was another time my dad hit me. And that one I understood because he was scared. I almost ran into traffic. And here's the thing. I remember the two times that my dad hit me. One time he felt that I was disrespectful. The other time he was scared for me. But I did a lot of stupid things. You know what? There were plenty of things he could have hit me about. He didn't hit me on.
Go figure.
So you got hit by your priest, or they wanted to?
Well, twice I was subjected to a major corporal punishment in high school. One left bruises on my ass can I say that on the radio? For 3 weeks.
Oh, man.
God. And my father was livid. He had gone to the same high school, and he was not happy. And this was by way of having this particular person take his anger out of me. It wasn't actually the punishment, as it turned out. I did something colossally stupid, but the punishment didn't fit the crime. I never engaged in corporal punishment with my five children. I'm sure Kathy didn't with her two either. But my dad had the same hand as me, big palm, short fingers, and he didn't need a weapon.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's brutal. I had my mom didn't realize that when she sent me to Our Savior Lutheran Norwood Park School that she had signed a document that said that she gave permission for corporal punishment. And I was, so Mr. Z had two paddles. One was called Big Ben, was a thick piece of wood with a handle on it. And the other one was Little Mo, which was a lighter piece of like pine with holes in it. So it would move faster.
Right. That's what they used.
Do you remember that?
Large large paddle with holes in it to cut down on the air resistance.
Yes.
So that they
could hit harder.
Right. Yeah. Like at full force.
It's really sad that they're using physics to make it harder,
right?
Make the punishment harder on the kids.
That's a good point.
To inflict pain. It's terrible.
But if a fight broke out, Father Enright wouldn't break it up. He'd say, close the door.
Right.
Wow.
I heard those stories too from my dad with the nuns. Right on the wrist.
You'd have at it. And that's just the way things were done in the
70s. He would let you duke it out?
Yeah.
Is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Mr. Z, I got in trouble. Well, first, Terry and Rob. Terry, you met. Terry was in studio that night with the genealogy group from Irish American Heritage Center. So Terry O'Connell and Rob Grabowski were laughing at something that I said. And they were taken to the hallway. And, man, I was like, wow, I really dodged a bullet. They got in trouble and not me. I don't know what happened in the hallway. I don't know if they snitched on me or if he was just making me sweat it out or make me think that I was getting away with something. And then they called me to the hallway so that they could watch me get paddled, too. And they had already been hit. And I remember Rob just crying and Terry was trying not to. And he put his arm around me. And this is what I'll always remember, even more than getting hit. And I had keys in my back pocket, by the way, when I got hit with
take your wallet out.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he goes, by the way, we were allowed to choose between Big Ben and Little Mo. It was a tough choice. Yeah.
Which paddle you want to be smacked with?
Yeah. You always choose. We chose Big Ben because Mr. Z wasn't very strong. So he put his arm around me, and this is what it was so much worse than being hit. I remember thinking, oh my God, just hit me, because he had the worst BO and smoker's breath. So he's got his arm around me, and he's talking to me, and he goes, you have a mouth that's like a caboose on a train track that never ends. I'm like, oh, please just hit me. Please just hit me.
Oh my.
Yeah. So
he's insulting you.
Yeah, oh, the whole thing. Oh, the whole.
That's disgusting.
It's just seeing this nasty smoker's breath.
It kind of reminds me of The Wall, Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Oh, yeah.
When they talk about, how the teachers are abusing the kids and they're taking out their frustrations on the kids.
They're getting abused by their wives at home.
Yeah, I don't know. Or they're lonely and they just, because Mr. Z was single at the time. I think he found love later. I don't know why I know these things. This is what it's like to go to a small parochial school. I transferred out of Onahan to Our Savior. That's where, because, public schools, obviously, they didn't do that at all. So you went to private school?
Public.
No, public school.
Yeah,
right.
I went to public school, south suburbs.
Esmeralda, did you go to private school or public school?
Oh, public.
Public, yeah, so there's no. How about you, Michael, all public schools?
No, I went all private, Catholic school, ages like 5 to 20.
And no corporal punishment?
Oh, there was. Yes.
Oh, there was?
We had many nuns in our school, and the priests were the principals, and it was a very interesting time. And our gym teachers, it's weird to look back on it now and see how much free rein they had to, like, grab kids and if they were, causing any trouble, to hold them by their neckties or grab their sweaters. And
wow.
But everyone turned out okay.
Yeah,
we turned out okay.
Yeah,
maybe besides that one kid who went to jail, but
you gotta wear a clip-on tie.
Everyone else
gotta break away.
Yeah, exactly. You get a little bit of a.
Oh, we would get detentions for wearing the clip-on tie. Clip-on tie. We needed to be freshly shaven. And here's one thing I remember: if you weren't shaved in the morning, they'd make you shave your face with a dry razor. And that was the most painful.
Oh, come on.
That's just mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
What? With a dry razor? That doesn't even seem safe.
Ouch.
Right?
No.
Especially when you could barely grow a mustache.
We were talking earlier about eating things that maybe are not safe, healthy, or advisable, especially as kids. From the 847, my best friend and I would share one piece of gum, and we took turns who would chew the gum first.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Come on. Yeah. What?
Well, it's probably no different than when you have a heavy makeout session.
That's swapping.
It's
spit.
True, yeah.
Right?
What is happening? Okay, all right, 47. I'm not judging. They seem to have found the logic in your practices.
I don't approve. I'm just commenting.
You just commenting.
I don't approve at this point.
And also, we made real mud pies, and we would play dice games, and the loser had to taste the pie.
Oh, we made mud pies, but we didn't eat them.
Yeah, I never made a mud pie. What was the point of mud pie? Was just pretend you were baking?
Yeah, you played in the dirt. Yeah, you played in the dirt. You added water to it, and it made it all sloppy, and then you made a mud pie. And we made them on my grandma's balcony because she lived in an apartment. And she's like, what did you just make all over my balcony? So she took the broom and swept it off, and we're like, oh, there goes our mud pie.
Oh, man.
The idea was never to eat it.
Right. Well, apparently, it was more of a dare kind of a thing. Did you guys ever get dared to do anything that you wish you hadn't?
Well, there was always the truth or dare.
Truth or dare. Law school. Yep.
Law school was a truth or dare?
Is that how you ended up in law school? I dare you to go to law school.
Yeah.
Okay, I will.
Good call.
Darn it. Did anybody ever choose truth when we played truth or dare? You're 12 years old.
If you were feeling kind of wimpy, you would choose truth.
Right. You want to be picked on.
I went to all boys Catholic high school. There was no such thing.
There's no such thing as truth?
No, there was no such thing as truth or dare.
Oh, you guys didn't do truth or dare. That makes sense.
Or spin the bottle?
Never participated with who?
You never played spin the bottle? Oh, no. John. You guys have to go home and play spin the bottle now.
That was fun.
Uh-oh. I get you again. Yay.
I was living in a cocoon in the 70s.
Michael, did you guys ever play spin the bottle?
Yes.
Okay.
I remember, and a girl named Megan called my parents on us the next day because we aren't allowed to play that at a Catholic school when you're in seventh grade.
Snitch.
So, yeah.
Oh.
But I do remember that, and that was some good times. One of the best first kisses, because you do it on the weekend, and then you'd go back to school, and everyone would be like, hey, remember when you kissed Lauren? Oh, my gosh. So awesome, right, man? Yeah, high five.
Basking in it.
Lauren's listening right now. Uh-oh. Like, great.
Uh-oh.
She's probably married.
Michael kisses and tells. Now we know.
Yeah.
Ez, did you ever play spin the bottle?
No, you troublemakers.
By the way, Mommy, I never played Spin the Bottle or Truth or Dare when I was in grade school. Never, ever, ever happened. The thing was...
Never did for real?
Of course I did.
Oh, I was like, what? You can't do anything now.
You know what the thing is? We had the sad... Okay, I apologize to my classmates, but there were 12 girls and 5 boys. The proportions were not fair. We only... Everybody only wanted a kiss. Maybe Chip... Guido, we had a kid named Guido in our class. Rob, no, even though Rob misremembers that a little bit differently, he thought I was very excited. I was not, because he had braces and he would headbutt you when he kissed you, and you're like, great, now I have a scar. That's going to be fun for me to remember. Bobby Fuse, who when we were supposed to French kiss, he came at me with his tongue out. I'm like, I thought I was a deer lick. I thought, what is going on here? So yeah, I'm a little bit scarred from Spin the Bottles. But what is bizarre to me is that gap, right?
So it's a buffalo love.
So you play Spin the Bottle and Truth or Dare like about 13, 14 years old. Then several years go by. Then you're in college playing games like Never Have I Ever. And man, do things change in that gap. Mm-hmm. About what you have done. It's a little, we won't play it right now. More after this on 720 WGN. You'll listen to Patty Basket Show with Andre Darlis on 720. Come on, I hope we can get happy. I feel like I perhaps... sent some folks down memory lane with some painful thoughts about their childhoods and getting hit and stuff, because we were talking about our teachers at private schools that hit us, John Culver. My teacher named his paddles Big Ben and Little Mo. That's something you never shake, those things. But there's a student from at St. Lawrence High School that Michael was talking about having to shave with a dry razor. At St. Lawrence High School, if your sideburns were below the earlobes, the dean would dry shave you. Oh, this is...
As a kid growing up, the priests would come in to the grade school, Dearborn Divine Child in Dearborn, Michigan, and if your hair was over your collar, you had to go to the rectory and get your hair cut.
Really? Oh, no.
So you got hip to that. You put your head down.
Right, so it didn't touch the collar.
Yeah, my chin was on my chest.
The time.
When my hair was still straight, I grew it as long as I could.
Well, and that was the style, man. Also from the same school, the 773, Spanish teacher at St. Lawrence had a piece of rubber that was 3 inches by 12 inches, half inch thick, and even had a name tag on it, Wilbur. What are they named him? It's so...
It's crazy.
It's icky. Yes. And creepy and icky and blue. And by the way, you guys were talking off the air about what it would be like to be a kid now. Because the 815 says, I always got my ass beat. Kids today have no idea. Grade school was the same way. I laughed my ass off. But here's the thing. You guys are talking about how hard it would be to today. Be a kid now. They may not be getting hit or spanked as much the way we were. But the pressures that they're growing up with, right. I wouldn't. I think I'd. Yeah, I wouldn't want this.
We only got bullied directly.
Yes. The psychological warfare these kids go through.
There might be a kid in your face, and I'm not suggesting that was pleasant.
Right.
But now you can be bullied at any time from anywhere, and that's a problem.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's a gigantic problem. My kids, as far as I know, haven't been subjected to it, and if they were doing it to anybody, that would be grounds for, grounding indefinitely. Yeah. This is sort of thing
and
you don't tolerate. Don't pick on other kids.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
I agree. Well, we have a couple minutes. Tell me something good is just that I'm going to get a new floor for my bathroom because I've hated that floor for 15 years. It's been the bane of my existence. I don't know why I've let it go so long. Should have painted it, but now it's going to go away. Yeah. What about you, Andrea?
I'm going to say my something good today is I love to bike, and I haven't biked in about 3 days because I had a problem with my gear shift, and it got fixed today.
Yay!
So I get to ride tomorrow.
It's the little things.
It is the little things. I know that's silly, but you know, you're used to biking and being outside.
Yeah.
I took a walk today, and it was nice, but I missed biking, so
that's a good feeling.
Go back to doing it.
That's good. I hope it's downhill both ways for you, Andrea.
Thank you, Patty.
You're welcome. How about you? Tell me. Oh, has your mic not been on?
That's right. Oh,
Doc, you turn it on. I'm still learning the numbers. I had three. I had that mic on. See the empty one? I had that one on, so
oopsies.
I haven't turned that one off.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what happened. I was off by one. Doc, I didn't mean to leave
out
of this.
No worries. So I'm looking forward to a family trip that we're going to be taking to Poland. We'll be visiting my cousin, who has a 5-week-old infant.
Aww.
It's her first baby, and we're staying at her house, and we're going to go tour around the area around Kraków, Poland, and we spent the last weekend in Amsterdam. So it's
nice.
Me. We're celebrating my mom's 80th birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Mama.
Yeah, and my husband gets to go to Poland for the first time.
Yay.
So yay.
He looks excited about that.
I've been mispronouncing it as Krakow, not Krakow.
Uh-oh. Is that, what's your something good, John?
My kids have been out of town with my ex in North Carolina, and they're all coming back. And my teenagers are going to Lollapalooza.
Hey!
And Kathy and I are going to Lollapalooza on Sunday, which is our 7th anniversary of meeting at Lollapalooza.
Excellent. You met at Lolla?
Yes,
wow. They love music.
We need to do a story on you guys for Sunday. I know. I'm sorry.
Get their information.
I will.
I'll link you by email.
Yes.
Absolutely. Look at that.
Congratulations.
We'll take you to the spot.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
We go back.
Do you have vodka berry there?
It'd be all muddy.
Hallowed ground. Yeah. Well, actually, she had vodka when I met her.
she had you at vodka.
She had the tumbler. Don't tell
there
anybody.
You go, Michael. Before we go, tell me something good, Michael. I don't want to leave you out because I know you just got back from vacation.
Yeah, this was a great weekend. I just got back from vacation. I went to Denver. I've never been there before, and I thought I'd see what the city had to offer. I had a quick list of thank yous for people to thank from Denver, from Comedy Works, great team of Eddie and Alex, and there were two hilarious comedians, Greg Baumhauer and Mike Stanley, that just put on an amazing show. From Voodoo Comedy, Steve was a good man, and it was just a great time. I love Denver, so it's good to be back, though.
It's a great city. As before we go, I know I'm late, but do you have something good to tell us?
Beef barbacoa.
Oh, I love beef barbacoa. Okay, that does it.